Welcome back to Now Showing. I'm Patty Holly. The Performing Arts Association is bringing the Missoula Children's Theater back to St. Joseph next week. Executive Director of the Performing Arts Association, Christina Lund, says a visit by the Missoula Children's Theater offers area students who may be interested in theater a unique opportunity.
Missoula Children's Theater is a wonderful residency based out of Missoula, Montana. The company has been in existence since the 70s. They provide fine theater education there in the city of Missoula. And then additionally, they have taken it as their mission to travel around our country as well as around the world. They do it all out of the back of a little red pickup truck. Two directors in their mid-20s travel around and go from city to city, bringing the mission of Missoula Children's Theater. And that is to audition the children. Here in St. Joseph, we welcome auditioners between the grades of kindergarten through 12th, and so it's quite a wide span. They audition on Monday afternoons and then present a full musical performance that following Saturday. They actually do two shows. So it's quite magnificent how the young children come together. They learn how to work as a team by learning their, memorizing their lines, the choreography, the songs, the singing, and all in all, they have an excellent time. It's a good dabbling into the world of theater. It's a good understanding for the families to know what a time commitment with theater production and performances might be. And it's a nice introduction that can allow in most family schedules.
What performance will they bring to the stage this time?
This time around, we are very excited to have Cinderella. And as is the fashion with Missoula Children's Theater, they always bring something of a modern twist along with the stage production. We never quite know the full story until they arrive, but we know that it is something that parents in attendance, grandparents will know the overall storyline, but it will be worked in a way that the children will understand and have a good time as well.
Will they be casting the traditional roles we think of it as the story of Cinderella?
Some of the traditional roles, yes, will be cast as well as many others.
How do these students, these youngsters, how do they prepare for this?
There really is no necessary form of preparation. There is no material to learn ahead of time. We simply ask the students to come with large enthusiasm, the ability to follow instruction, and the willingness to get out there and have a good time.
You mentioned the time commitment a little earlier. What exactly is the time commitment for those students who are cast in roles?
Anyone that does come out for auditions on Monday, October 17th, we ask everyone to be there at 4, and they typically run from 4 to 6:30. It is a full two-hour time slot. No one can leave early. And then following that, we ask that anyone who is trying out for them to clear their week, because some of the younger children may have practiced just a few nights during the week. Some of the older children may be required to be there all week long. But essentially, the time frame is from 4 to 8:30, Monday through Friday. And then on Saturday, we ask them to be available all day. We begin rehearsal in the morning sometime between 10 and 11. And we do two performances that day, one at 3 and one at 7.
Now, the performance will be where?
The performance itself will be at Riverside Church at the corner of Mitchell and Riverside here in St. Joseph. This is a continuation of our mission to bring the theater out to the community of St. Joseph. We have brought Missoula out and about the community now for the past 3 years, and this is another partnership effort. We appreciate the staff and the volunteers there at Riverside Church for helping to make this happen.
Why does Performing Arts continue to bring the Missoula Children's Theater to St. Joseph?
Patty, this has been an effort that our organization has conducted for over 30 years now. And as was told last spring, there is never a No one ever gets tired of the Missoula concept. They continue to bring fun and entertaining titles for the week-long residencies. There are generations that participate in the tradition of sending their children to Missoula. Last spring, we had Wizard of Oz as our title, and we actually had 120 children try out for 60 roles. So I think it proves that there continues to be the need, the want, the desire for this type of outreach. It is a good formula that we have with Missoula. They do make themselves available through the week as part of the fee that the performing arts incurs. We are also able to offer a variety of workshops and typically partner up with a school for that opportunity as well.
You say last year you needed 60 cast members. Do you know how many cast members you need for Cinderella?
It typically is between 50 and 60 students.
And it sounds like response from the community has been overwhelming.
Yes, it continues to be phenomenal as we reach out to our friends there in Maryville and the Northwest Missouri region. Not all communities are fortunate enough to have a theater house in their community. And so typically we do have children. Their parents are very committed. They make the drive each day to and from their home cities. And it is not out of the norm for us to have a good representation from around the city of St. Joseph. Cinderella is a week-long residency for children in grades kindergarten through 12th grade. The performance that they put on Saturday afternoon is a condensed show. It typically lasts about 1 hour. It is the perfect introduction, not only for children to see what theater is like from the actor's point of view, but additionally families with young children. This is a wonderful opportunity to start having their children learn an appreciation of being in the audience and have the opportunity to enjoy a nice theater performance at a shortened length of time. So we fully welcome attendance from everyone.
That was Executive Director of the St. Joseph Performing Arts Association, Christina Lund. She says auditions for Cinderella will be Monday evening from 4 o'clock until 6 o'clock at Riverside Church at 1014 Riverside Road in St. Joseph. The production will be presented next Saturday, October 22nd at the church. Curtain times are 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. The St. Joseph Museum is marking the 150th anniversary of the Civil War with two special exhibits. Public relations officer at the museum, Kathy Reno, says some of the items on display at the exhibit have rarely been seen before.
Our exhibit that will be here on a semi-permanent basis is Civil War medicine. On October 5th, we're going to introduce, through a temporary traveling exhibit, and it's called Divided Loyalties, Civil War Documents from the Missouri State Archives. And it'll be here October 5th through December 18th, regular hours at our normal admission. And it's an exhibit that examines the upheaval and uncertainty that characterized Missouri during the Civil War era. We were very much a split state. And so this exhibit has the Civil War-related documents, the court cases, the things that show how charged the atmosphere was. It's not so much about battles and military strategy as it is about what the atmosphere was like. What were the issues that led up to the war, that led up to some of the stands that Missourians took, and what happened in our state after the war.
Now, are these items that people may have seen before?
I don't believe so, because most of these are documents that you don't see very often. They focus more on the legalities and the small skirmishes that happened, because it was very much neighbor against neighbor, brother against brother in the state, obviously. And it examines Missouri's pro-Southern elected state government in exile, and then what did the federally backed provisional government look like, because that's the one that took its place in June of 1861. So more than one-third of Divided Loyalties is devoted to the challenges Missourians faced, you know, during the decade after the war's end, because it impacted the 1865 Constitution that was written immediately after the war, a large portion of our population there were changes for, and it talks about the court cases that occurred as a result of the war.
Is St. Joseph mentioned in these documents, or how significant is this to St. Joseph and Buchanan County?
It relates to St. Joseph through a couple of very famous names. Because the courts weren't prepared to resolve all the wrongs committed during the war, many Missourians turned to vigilante violence to settle their disputes. And, of course, most famous among those attempting to even the score through criminal activity were the brothers Frank and Jesse James. So Divided Loyalties include several court cases and documents that chronicle various attempts to bring the James brothers and other outlaws to justice.
And let's talk about the permanent exhibit. What can you tell me about that?
Civil War Medicine opened this past April, and it will be on display through 2015, through all the years that the Civil War raged. It is dedicated to the medical aspects of the war, and we were very fortunate. We have the diary of an area doctor and two soldiers from the state of Missouri, from our area. And through their diaries, we were able to look out how medical treatment differed between the North and the South, the most common diseases and operations, the results, what we learned, because the medical community learned a great deal through the Civil War, because weaponry had advanced faster than medicine had. So a lot of advances were made in that period. They began to understand things about sanitation and this and that. Most people think that the majority of deaths were caused in battle, and obviously that was a major portion. But a lot of times rural soldiers are in a camp in tight quarters, exposed to diseases they hadn't been previously. So disease played a role in the war. And what we've done, thanks to Heartland Regional Medical Center here in town, who donated towards the exhibit, as did the Missouri Humanities Council, we created your average 1860s farm home, and it's been converted into a field hospital in the midst of battle. And doctors are operating and have stretchers waiting. And you can kind of see what that would have been like, because obviously there's not a hospital there. You take a home and you do a makeshift type of hospital. So this is a rare opportunity to see what was medicine like during that period.
Do you think people might be surprised by some of the things they see in that exhibit?
I was. I was very surprised, because I, like most people, thought only in terms of mini balls and battle injuries. It never occurred to me that they were also battling disease and what they did and did not understand about typical sanitation practices. I didn't realize there wasn't an organized ambulance corps before the Civil War battles. Yeah, there's all sorts of things they'll discover. And this was an exhibit while we were fabricating it. We were able to get a little more creative than normal because we had such great financial support.
Kathy Reno is the public relations officer for the St. Joseph Museum. She says Divided Loyalties, Civil War documents from the Missouri Archives, will be on display at the St. Joseph Museum through December 18th. Civil War Medicine is a permanent display that will remain open through 2015 at the St. Joseph Museum on Frederick Avenue in St. Joseph. An old art form gets new life with current technology at a new exhibit on the Northwest Missouri State University campus. Assistant Professor of Photography at Washburn University in Kansas, Mary Dorsey Wanless, is showing her artwork at the Olive Deluce Gallery for the next 2 months. She says her medium is tintype photography.
Tintypes are historical process, popular 1860s to 1900s. They were very inexpensive. People used them for trading cards almost, and if they were going to the Civil War, they might have a soldier's picture and uniform taken to leave with the family, that sort of thing. And they went out of popularity when the Brownie box camera came along. So what I do is kind of a hybrid process. I take a digital negative and make it the size that I want, the final product, and then use a tintype process in the darkroom. So I'm combining digital with the old historic process.
What keeps you coming back to this?
I love the surface. I love the hands-on. And I like combining digital, with the old hands-on process. So that hybrid combination and the color, but the surface is, really nice. Okay.
So what kinds of images do you work with or do you create in the darkroom then?
What I'm doing now is all self-portraiture. Everything is me, and it is about my process of aging.
When people come to see this, what do you hope that they take away from it?
I hope that they take away maybe a new appreciation for the aging body, and instead of thinking, oh, that person's old and saggy, they realize that there's beauty in the texture of the skin, in the forms. Also, respect, I think, for the process that we're all going through. And younger people can relate to it, saying, oh, my grandmother is that age, that kind of thing. Whereas older people, people that are my age or older, have their own stories to tell me about it, which I really enjoy.
Do you see yourself continuing with this type of process, or are you starting to go other areas in your art?
I'm going to continue this. My aging process is not going to stop. So I'm kind of looking into some other ideas. I think falling, is a really scary thing. And my mother she's 93 and a half. When you get to be over 90, you get the half back, So she's just had a big scare with the wrong kind of medication. And she's been paranoid and delirious and, those kinds of things. So I've started thinking a lot about paranoia, when you're that age. So I have some other areas to explore in the aging.
That was artist Mary Dorsey Wanless. Her exhibit, Evidence of Aging, will be on display at the Olive Deluce Art Gallery on the Northwest Missouri State University campus through December 9th. The gallery is open Monday evenings from 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock, Tuesdays through Saturdays from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock, and Sundays from 1:30 until 5 o'clock.
The heart of the baseball season is here. The playoffs underway and the World Series just around the corner. And here's a crackerjack novel about baseball, The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach. I'll begin with another of those when I was a boy stories that seem to multiply the further away from boyhood I get. Anyway, I loved the pulp fiction magazines when I was a boy. There were dozens of different pulps, so-called because they were printed on really cheap paper. There were romance pulps, western pulps, detective pulps, science fiction pulps, and my personal fave, sports pulps. Sports stories were almost identical. A loser, either a rookie or an aging veteran, makes a comeback and wins the big game at the end. Details changed from story to story, but these stories always led up to the big game. The pulps have met their demise, but their plot lines linger on in film and fiction. Think Robert Redford's The Natural for an example on film. So it goes in Harbach's novel, The Art of Fielding, but with some interesting twists and a fascinating cast of characters who rise above the cardboard figures from the conventional pulp stories. This book's a real page-turner. The story starts with Mike Schwartz, a student and stalwart on the baseball team at Westick College, a Division III school. He's playing summer legion ball in a Hicktown tournament. He notices Henry Scrimshander, a scrawny high school kid on the opposing team, plays shortstop. Henry is a phenom in the field with the instincts of a natural. The best fielder Schwartz has ever seen and a rifle for an arm. Can he hit? Maybe not, or not yet. But Schwartz is so impressed that he goes back to Westish and prevails on his baseball coach to recruit Henry on scholarship. Henry's Bible is The Art of Fielding, a book Harbach made up supposedly by the fictional Hall of Fame shortstop Aparicio Rodriguez. It's more than a manual on how to play the shortstop position. It sort of links the game to life, and for Henry, reading it is almost a Zen meditation. So it's off to West East for baseball and new friends. Harbach establishes a memorable cast of characters who act out multiple plot lines. Schwartzy, as he's called, is Henry's mentor, forcing him to eat and bulk up and relentlessly building his body, turning him into a good hitter as well as a superb shortstop. By his junior year, Henry is ranked as a top draft choice, in line for a huge bonus. Schwartzy is a good but not great baseball and football player. He longs for greatness in sports he knows he has the ability to achieve. What he doesn't realize or won't admit is that he has the makings to be a superb coach, but that doesn't count for him. Owen is Henry's roommate and a fellow member of the baseball team who introduces himself to Henry by saying, "I'll be your gay mulatto roommate." College president Gernot Offenlight was a famous scholar in American literature who has returned to his alma mater as president. He's known as a bon vivant and ladies' man. But ah, could the sin that cannot be named lurk in his heart? His daughter Pella has a love-hate relationship with her father and in trying to live up with him has to rebel. She married a man much older than she when she was 18. Now, racked by depression, she's lost her way. She leaves her husband and returns home to live with her father and finish her degree. So, Pella, Schwartz, Owen, Offenlight, and the whole baseball team interact as the West East team goes from doormat to winner in the great tradition of the sports story formula. Henry Strimshander is the locus of all the plot lines. Henry is sort of a holy innocent who lives for baseball and has no real life outside it. But when he commits his first ever throwing error that results in a nasty accident, I can't talk about that without revealing too much. Suffice it to say, he loses his confidence and can't field his position. Can he regain his skills? The art of fielding works out most of the conventions of the sports story. They almost always have a loser or losing team working its way to greatness along with a big game at the end. The joy of the art of fielding is that it embraces these conventions but enacts them with original and interesting characters. It's a leisurely read, about 500 pages, but it's one of those books that cry out to you, telling you to drop whatever you're supposed to be doing and read it. I'm giving it 4.5 stars out of 5.
That was Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information and links to the events and organizations you hear about on Now Showing on the KXCV KRNW website, kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday for another edition of Now Showing. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.